Thank you very much for inviting me here. It's a treat. It's a treat. Now, I've been changing this presentation after each talk. So by now, it's probably five presentations in one. So please forgive the aesthetics. And at the same time, when I created the title, because we need to have a title, I was thinking about a number of things that were already covered. So I mean, everything is open. Open science, open research. Then, what means open? That was the question that I tried to raise at the beginning with the title, but it was answered in some way, so I decided to go a little bit deeper. And work, yes, and this one works as well. I'm sorry? Yeah. So essentially, because I just put five presentations together, so it's a little bit long, but I have a few videos, and one will be fun, at least. And people have been asking me a lot of stuff about where I'm coming from and that stuff, so I will cover that as well. And we will go through these things. And essentially, this is the one that I believe that could be of use about, if not a platform, at least the concept that makes us get together as an open source community to work for a big project, which is the Square Kilometer Array. So essentially, the presentation will go through a number of principles and problems that we are facing at the Square Kilometer Array, how we are proposing to solve them, that I believe that could be extrapolated for some of the problems mentioned here. Right. So I always start by the end because I expect that you have an attention span due to my limited conditions. So this is the last slide, right? So trust me, this will be the last slide, but let's go through it. The first thing that I want to present is that the SKA, I will give you figures. Big data will make things extremely complex for you as scientists, as researchers, because you are facing a data deluge never seen before. That will create a lot of complications when we enter, when we start to use 10 to the power of 18 computing power calculations per second. That will change how you manage that information. I still don't know if it will be a progressive or a tsunami avalanche. But it will happen. This will happen. And then you are relying on algorithms that some of them have been written decades or even centuries ago. I mean, how would they scale? So you are having a gap between the computational power, between what you need to do, the problems that you can solve, but you cannot because you are dealing with poor algorithms. How are you going to deal with that? I submit that the only way that you can overcome this is using open source software, because the successful computing is modular in order to overcome those overheads. And at the same time, I am witnessing the heterogeneity. What means that? That we are some way going back to the glorious days of the mainframe when everything was in a box, and on the days where we didn't have open source software, we just had software. I mean, it came with the machine. And these days, we are seeing more and more purpose-built bespoke machines for simulation, for modeling. That's another thing. And then you start to ask yourself, I'm using a monolithic operating system. Do I need 80% of that? Most of them are drivers. And because I want, it will be reasonably much more cost-efficient to build a machine or a system. And by machine and system, I expect you to imagine something decentralized. It's not a big box in a corner consuming a lot of electric power. It's just a lot of stuff, doesn't matter where it is. But running a standard operating system is not necessarily cost effective. Keep quiet. So, and then a part of the core question that I was going to ask at the beginning, then I added a lot of other stuff, is how can you trust the data on what you base your experiments? It coming from different sources, that's my, I am trying to be heterogeneous, but however, I need to have some homogeneity in my experiment because otherwise I cannot be changing, it cannot be replicable. It comes from everywhere. How do you trust that? It's not that you don't trust your team. Your team brings things from others, from others, from others. This is growing exponentially. Exponentially, I cannot say. It's growing very, very fast. And that brings me into the questions about the security, which is not about bad people hacking. Security means good practice. Accidents make things as vulnerable as bad people. Came to mind the supposed missile attack to Hawaii a few weeks or months ago. Nothing bad happened. It's just a guy who misunderstood something, or the system wasn't well prepared for that. So that's when I start to ask about black swans, which is just a generic concept that I will elaborate a little around that. But things doesn't necessarily need to go poorly or bad if you know what are you doing. But you will argue, hey, I am a scientist with a long track record. I know what are you doing. Yes, do you know everything which is coming into your stream of information? That's the question that I'm trying to ask. Which brings me to the less is more. It's not only less code, but less everything. And because I have a background in business, I love this comment, which I insist that the change in this room, in this workshop, it's about culture. We have the talent, we have the elements. Peter Drucker was a management expert. He said a lot of interesting things. And there is another so-called expert here, which says that you can bring a lot of talented people, but if you don't give them purpose, it's not only a misuse or a waste, it's criminal to don't put talent into a good purpose. And that's the open source ethos. And at the end, after, I don't know, 200 slides that I have here, I will use slides from someone else, which is from a company in New Zealand, which I believe that have some ideas that will be of use. So you can leave now. Okay.
More details, please.
Eh?
More details, please.
Thank you. It's his fault. The next 68 slides is his fault. Okay, so let's give a little bit of, I live 3 minutes from here. This is my little place in the universe, which is exactly here. Now, perception matters, and this is something that I will give you a little bit of more context. So I literally live in the bottom of the world, but it depends how you see this bottom in the center or just marginal, and I should add another map where New Zealand just simply doesn't appear, or sometimes has a sort of bipolar disorder that appears here and here as well. So, but technically, this is an acceptable map, and I live in this town which has 12,000 people. So that's where I am with ultra with fiber, 200 megabytes. I don't need anything else.
Why this world war map?
Say it again? I have no idea. Because you can put it in a wall, who knows? So I am not very good with attributions. This is, you put a New Zealand world map in Google and comes something which has enough colors to put here. This is another map of where I'm living. Okay, so why I am in New Zealand, these are factoids. You can have, and this is somewhat important for me to make a point, that today you can substantiate any claim by finding information somewhere with a decent amount of, how can I say, seriousness. So apparently we are the most prosperous country in the world. We have the best place to do business, to start a business. We are the less corrupt country in the world, sometimes shared with Denmark or some other boring country like us. But this is one that I am interested to highlight here. All 8 New Zealand universities are in the top 450 from the 26,000 universities worldwide. Doesn't matter which ranking. I won't fight about if it's the Shanghai or the Times or whatever. All the rankings put the 8 universities in the same situation. This is a unique case in the world, which is worth highlighting for a number of reasons, but it gives an idea of the homogeneity of the country and the talent. The smallest university has 4,000 students, the largest has 30, 35. Right. Other thing that conditions us is that we have small and medium enterprise. So most of the country, it's small business. So we have an entrepreneurial culture very, very strong. Then you have these kind of rankings that Wellington is the best city in the world. We can fight with Vancouver, with Melbourne, whatever, whatever. We are who we are, 4.7 million, a few hobbits, a lot of sheep, world champion of rugby, which is a game that exists, and lovely outdoors. But what I really love is to have, we have literally a different perspective by being at the bottom of the world. So we have a different perspective in New Zealand, which is exactly here at the top of the world. So perception matters, okay? There is absolutely no reason to say that this is right or wrong, apparently from historic or political reasons. So people, perception matters, right? And this is a context that I want to give you with regards to the open source thing that we will discuss. Right, so who am I? I am a legal holder of all these things. So I was born in Uruguay from Hungarian parents, which as you can read, this is pure Hungarian. And I am a New Zealand citizen. So I have three citizenships. So that's why I married a clinical psychologist to help me with the identity crisis. Now, Hungarians, do you know Hungarians a little bit? They have some distant relatives in Europe.
Finnish people?
Finnish people, yes. So that helps you to have some conversation with Finn people. I'm sure if you recognize, this guy does open source here and there. He works for, I don't know who knows. Okay, so I was born in Uruguay, in New Zealand. I have a background in math and engineering in Uruguay, but I'm an entrepreneur literally with a degree. I have a master of entrepreneurship, which means that I'm qualified to build ventures, which later I pass to MBAs who destroy them, sorry, who manage them. So that's how it works. I built the first e-learning company in Latin America specialized in math. So I had I'm a dot-com survivor, means that I have no money. But I learned a thing or two. So part of my approach is based on my background in the venture capital industry. I've been for a decade in the Angel Investor Association, so created a couple of dozen of startups. And Open Parallel, my current venture, it's since 2010. And I've been involved in the SKA project in two of the work packages. This stands for Central Signal Processor and Science Data Processor. We will discuss about that a little bit. And as part of my vision and my strategy, I organize a little workshop every year, a little bit bigger than this one. And I've been involved with the LCA, which is a decent conference, 600 to 800 people every year. That's where you meet Linus and take some photos there. This is a New Zealand open source society. So I'm not claiming deep expertise. I'm claiming decent exposure. Or what I am proud of, I care. I do care. I learn, and I try to pass the word. So we had an introduction about a prime minister. Well, I have ministers as well in my conference. She's the Minister of Science and Innovation. This was a month ago. Says a number of things here. But I have two ministers instead of one. She's the Minister of ICT and Broadcasting. But why I'm putting this here, because these two presentations, this is Professor Bruce Mellado from CERN and from Witwatersrand in South Africa. So he is the lead of the ATLAS experiment and was part of the Higgs boson project. And he is Dan Stanzione, who is the director of the Texas Advanced Computing Center and did the computation for LIGO. So the only point that I'm showing off here is that I'm reasonably exposed to certain problems that you guys discuss in this building, or I assume that, but from the big data perspective. So, okay, this is go to the conference, tickets for sale soon, whatever. So Wellington, and here is the website. It's easy to find. Okay, so what is the SKA? The Square Kilometer Array. A complex scientific, political, and engineering effort to build the world's largest, most powerful radio telescope, which I keep learning has very different than a standard astronomy telescope. It will be built between Australia and South Africa. You can find everything, but in my world, I consider it the largest supercomputer of the world because we will need exaflop, which is 10 to the 18, capability to process and reduce the massive amount of data. So we have hundreds of thousands of antennas, and a video will show that. And at some stage, all these dishes will produce 160 terabytes per second. That's a decent amount of data, which it's big data, seriously, but it's the big data that Facebook and Google will face in 5 years, 10 years, I don't know. So this is an interesting experiment from a non-radio astronomer. It's an interesting experiment about how can we, as a community, prepare for what's coming. So, a little bit of geography, Western Australia and Southern Africa, a number of countries. Founding countries has been Australia, South Africa, etc. The site selection was between South Africa and competing in Australia and New Zealand. That's how New Zealand, a country with five radio astronomers, become a full member. And it's just a unique opportunity for a non-central country to be part of the largest engineering and scientific experiment of the next decade. From a design perspective, we have very talented people participating, I don't know, in the human brain or different projects, participating, following the lead of central countries. In this project, we are a strong part of the design. We own specific parts of the design. Okay, so this is general information. You will see it a little bit more in the video. But this is why the SKA will be built. This is the science behind it, which when I am talking with general public, I emphasize that, OK, we are going to find green people. So I am, again, as an entrepreneur, there are certain things that impress me. It's probably not impressing in this audience, but to me, looking at the fact that I'm surrounded by things that we don't understand at the rate of 95% is just surprising. So that's interesting. Okay. The science, the SKA is divided in 11 work packages. Some countries are in charge of a telescope manager, others of building infrastructure in South Africa. I mean, sorry, not some countries. Some countries lead that work package. Canada leads the central signal process. So the science data processor is led by the University of Cambridge, and New Zealand has some responsibilities. And the science data processor is defined here, as you can read. And Open Parallel has a tiny, tiny, tiny responsibility. So I always say that I am just the guy who serves the coffee. And no one cares about the guy who serves the coffee until there is no coffee, or it's cold, or it's bad taste, or whatever. Then everything goes wrong. So better you have the coffee right. And the coffee in this case is the operating system and a few things that no one cares about. But this is a little bit of marketing. Here it highlights again, 157 terabytes per second, nearly 5 zettabytes per year. This is all because, say, this is enough to fill 35,000 DVDs. What is a DVD? So, but you need to sell these ideas for funding agencies, so you put some sort of creative. These are, this sort of Christmas trees are the antennas of the low frequency of the SKA, who will be located here in Western Australia.
Is that just the data for SKA low?
That's a good question. Yes, yes, it says here. But again, this was before the rebaselining. So, and this is raw data. But still, it's, even if it's an order of magnitude less, I'm throwing you, imagine that it's 15 terabytes per second. So I'm throwing you 15 hard drives per second. Manage, right? And don't melt the data center. Right. So I will show you a little bit of videos to have some idea of the data window. Which one is this? Yeah, full screen. Like this. So this has no sound, but essentially it's just telling you the scale of the data. Petabytes here, then CERN, 15 petabytes per year. Facebook has been quoted here. This is business emails worldwide per year, and here is the SKA mid, and here is the low. So remember, Facebook was somewhere here, right? So, and then this is the marketing stuff. But this is big data serious, right? Okay. Here's the DVD crap again. But it ends in 1 second, so. So are you starting to think in terms of zettabytes? It's time to, because it will come, 5 zettabytes. Okay, thank you. Now, let me show you, this is 3 minutes or 5, or not much.
The Square Kilometer Array. The SKA will detect radio waves to reveal the hidden universe and answer fundamental questions about the cosmos. Its overwhelming size will enable it to peer deep into space, back to a time known as the Dark Ages, before the first stars shone. The SKA will reveal how the first galaxies formed from huge clouds of hydrogen gas, and will reveal the origins of supermassive black holes at their centers. It will survey the sky 10,000 times faster than existing telescopes to create a 3D map of galaxies in space and cosmic time. This map will help us understand how galaxies evolve and how the acceleration in the expansion of the universe is driven by a mysterious dark energy. The SKA will search for gravitational waves, ripples in the fabric of space-time, by monitoring pulsars, the collapsed spinning cores of dead stars. These gravitational waves are generated when supermassive black holes interact. The SKA will also investigate how gravity behaves close to black holes. The unique sensitivity of the SKA will enable the study of radio emissions from the early universe that have passed through magnetic fields in space. This will help identify the origins of cosmic magnetism, a fundamental force difficult to study at other wavelengths. And through its ability to detect organic molecules and investigate how other Earth-like planets are formed, it might even answer the question, are we alone in the universe? The SKA will revolutionize our understanding of the cosmos. It will take us on a voyage into the unknown. Who knows what else it may reveal?
There you go. Okay, so today the Pathfinder, it's already generating 5 terabytes per second. So this is happening now in Australia. Now, the second phase of the SKA, which will be from 25 to 2030-ish, will be an order of magnitude. So the whole point that I'm making with the SKA here is that it's a mega science project that not only created its own ecosystem, but by being an international collaboration between academia and companies, it could be as an interesting model for things that are we're discussing here. Yes. So the central signal processor is led by Canada. I did stuff for that in the software development environment for them. It's an IDE, no big deal, but you still need to write 80 pages for that on the exascale side of it. But what I want to discuss in coming slides is the learnings that we have around operating systems and security for the science data process, which brings me to the question about, is your data safe and is your science reliable as a consequence? So the attacks in the repositories are real. And information needs to be concerned in safeguarding this confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And curiously, these are the CIA topics. It's a little bit ironic. But then we need to add a non-repudiation that we cannot deny having received that transaction, which is an interesting topic in this blockchain days. Now, the protection of the data in hostile environments, which means you are in touch with someone, you are not isolated, requires defense in depth, which ultimately requires protecting the operating system. And then you say, isn't that something that the vendor will take care of that? Well, ask Intel. Have you heard about Meltdown and Spectre? Well, if not, well, bless you in your ignorance. If you heard about it, this is only going to get worse. Now, attacks and accidents can be similar, and an accident means that you can lose data due to bugs in other people's code, which is something that we discussed in earlier presentations today, particularly what Andrew and Anfor. So the vulnerabilities are sometimes due to errors, and errors sometimes are due to poor development. And then it comes to me as a contractor, and I need to deal with all these things. And I cannot blame you because you are intelligent people. You are the clever scientists that you cannot be blamed for doing poor code. But actually, probably it's good code, but it's poorly mixed. So, and then there is another thing which happens in different areas, which perhaps I don't need to explain too much, which are the transduction attacks. But the reliability matters at many, many levels. Right, so I suggest that have a look at this article. And I will mention this more than once. It's the communication of the Association of Computing Machinery. It's a reasonably respectable magazine. So the security in the HPC environment from this guy is something that I think that can apply for scientific environments. Most of the HPC environments are used for science as well. Now, what is a security policy? It's a statement of what is and what is not allowed. It's not necessarily that we need to forbid things. In this environment, this is allowed, this is not. And that can change depending on the environment. So, but the problem that I have in these open systems is that scientists have identities never validated or never validated against an updated set of restrictions. So, then I start to face certain threats, data leakage, data alteration, misuse of computing cycles. I'm trying to convince people on the SKA board that it's an excellent place to mine bitcoins. When everyone is looking at the skies and someone is mining bitcoins in South Africa. So who will pay the electricity bill? So at the end of the day, if you reduce complexity, that helps to everyone. Reducing complexity means that writing good code, doing proper science, the same rigor that you apply to your papers, to your logic, to your axioms, why don't you apply it to do good code? Which we'll discuss that I'm repeating this, but I'm working, and this is a company task as well, towards a transformational operating system based on my work in the SKA, and I will discuss later the architecture considerations for security. It means that in the same way that you can build a house, a greenhouse, meaning that, okay, if I orient towards the sun or I have this incorporated, so I am saving a lot of power, I can build an architecture or a system with other considerations. And my analogy is with cars. I mean, the amount of steel used to build a 4T or a chassis for a 4T, it's enough to build, I don't know, half dozen of existing cars today. And it's still the definition of the car is the same, four wheels, windscreen, whatever. So this is all certain things that I want to ask for scientific software. I want to use it for a very long time, because if I have a paper out there and I want to reproduce it in 20 years, I want to have the right to use it and to support it. That was a discussion that we had just a few minutes ago. You want me to finish? I barely started.
Yeah, 5 more minutes for discussion.
Okay. So, so these are the rights that I want to look at. And most importantly, the right to control rights. So if I build a software purpose written for the science, then I should have the right to keep changing it according to my interest, not according to the vendor or even the community. It's not about ownership. It's about having the possibility of doing these things. And that's, to me, the power of open source. It's not that it's free. It's not. We can see the code, and we have right to do these things. Okay, so if he wants, just the ethos. These are simply three things: release early, release often. It's simple as that, which is it's the opposite of publishing a paper. You won't dare to publish anything, to present it to consideration of the community, until you are 120% convinced that this is right. It's exactly the opposite. You start to publish when you have done 1.2% or something. Why? Because that's the power of the community. Which brings us to what is loosely called the Linus Law, that if you release it and a lot of people are looking at, someone will find something that you haven't seen it. For a number of reasons, it's not that you are not competent. You can have a cultural approach which is different. I mean, the Mayans' approach to math is different than the Arabs. I'm digressing, but the point is, sometimes you start to digress by discussing the color of the bike shed, which is the law of triviality. Look at Wikipedia. Okay, so I have another 40 slides that I will pass in the next 4 minutes. Meaning,
that's 5 minutes including discussion. So
okay.
Some time for questions.
So this is the guide of the bike shed, which in my opinion is as important as Linus. He is the main contributor of the FreeBSD. And for your information, FreeBSD is the basis of Mac OS or iOS or other things. So perhaps someone recognized Ian Foster here, so ignore the idiot here. So, okay, we will. This was an interesting slide because it's important for you to recognize when things are not going well. And of course, you need to quote the mythical man Monk, bike shedding.
You have a slide with a controversial statement?
Yes, all of the previous ones. I want to highlight this one, which is he left Simon, say, teach your children well. This is my alma mater. I went to the university in Uruguay. It's an old library, which I spent hours there. And then I brought my nephew there one day, and hey, this he wants to study there. And he ended up asking, what are these? It's a school of engineering. It's where you store the tools, for example. Why should he know that this is how you archive information? So, sometimes I had the impression in these days that we are discussing things that will be dead soon. So, and I was going to tell you a few interesting things, but this is controversial enough. Science and research communities would benefit by exploring the ethos on top of using the tools. We don't have to follow Gordon Gekko. If you are old enough to remember Wall Street, and if you heard my conversation today about the Reagan era, this actually permeated a culture in the 80s. And I wonder if this culture is not coming back again this decade. So we don't have to do this. There is always another way. There is another video here that I won't show you. And this is, can I pass only three slides? No one say yes, I end here. So, thank you.
Any questions or comments for the talk?
Nicholas, maybe you can pull up that first slide that you had, the key messages. You mean the last slide? That...
Yeah. Well, I'm going there because it's at the end. Here it is. So the point that I'm trying to make is that we are working in an architecture which is similar to... Have you heard about OpenStack? Anyone heard of... I mean...
Oh, yes. Not a point,
yes. Yes. Well...
Like Docker or something.
Sorry?
Something like Docker.
Not really. Okay. I mean, it's... Well, that just confirms my worry. I'm sorry, mate, but you will allow me to go through this. This is an open source project, OpenStack. Nearly 7,000 code submitters, 30,000 participants, 107,000 commits per year up to February. You have a governance board, you have tools, resources, user groups, a hall of fame, everything. It's not something that you need to use for your system. It's a model of a platform that works extremely well. And guess who started this project? It's in your sticker in your laptop. NASA.
Oh, it was Nebula, right?
I think so. I mean, NASA gave up, and now, I mean, this board has companies, universities. It's the largest open source software project in the world by far, and it's not even 10 years old. So it's a model of, and massive amount of, ask your IT department, they certainly will know about OpenStack. And I'm going to repeat, it's a tool for cloud computing, but the model used for that worldwide, it's something that I think that should be applicable here. Thank you. Yes?
Does the scale up of data that you foresee, do you think that forces movement towards more data sharing in open science, or do you think it...
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you don't foresee for your research, then someone else will, and then you won't be leading, you will be following. Because simply, I mean, what he mentioned about Facebook, or everything that you start to aggregate, you start your green computer, sorry, John Deere. I am dealing with John Deere in one way or other. John Deere has, my analogy with John Deere is Windows 95. And they want to monopolize all the data that are coming from the field. So they literally are licensed, they are granting you a quarter of a million license of something that they call Harvester, but technically they are just surveying all what you supposedly own, which is your land. Now the question is, who owned that data? John Deere wants to believe that is them. But if you want to discuss with the government for drought, throw the seeds for this crop, but I want to have a history of this crop in the last 5 years. So I go to the public data, but then I use my data. Wait a minute, it's John Deere's data, and Monsanto has the same, and Syngenta has the same. So we are start to facing an open data or data ownership problem, which you start to say, okay, open or not, let's aggregate. That becomes massive. And then we start to say, okay, but I have this data compounded by inhabitants, or other crops, or weather. It grows. And the tools are here. You can do it now. The only one who is not prepared is you. I mean, we are not prepared just because Facebook is, and is still doing stupid things like the Cambridge Analytica. Yes?
So, zettabytes, I think, was the unit per year of data from the SKA, means, I'm assuming these numbers are data rates from the correlator, not data that's going to be kept long term.
Still, the data kept is massive, and that's another problem.
I'm sure, but I'm curious if there's discussions about who decides what to keep. So, for example, is a particular set of data particularly interesting? I mean, I know it's got presumably survey modes and...
Well, the idea is to keep as much as possible, because once you discard it, you cannot replicate it.
Well, except the universe will still be there, I suppose.
Yeah, but that explosion that...
You... Astronomy, sure.
Yeah, that's...
If you're just doing big surveys, you can just maybe just...
Well, that's not the spirit. The spirit is that if you do not make use of that data, or the problem that I am highlighting from the security side is what happened with the LIGO, when you saw these gravitational waves that happened, it was a telescope in Australia. It was hacked. The guys were, oh, look how cool it is. Let's pass it. They weren't able to move it for 2 days. It was hacked, because it was a crappy code somewhere, and until they figured out that they were able to move it. So that observation was lost forever. All right. Yes?
So I guess the sort of follow-up question is that with this kind of data rates, presumably you still want to process the data. So I mean, what kind of exascale computing capabilities would be necessary?
All. Exascale computing capabilities are being developed in China, in Japan, in the US, and in Europe.
But would it be even sufficient, or would we be talking about something like 10 to 21?
Well, the problem that the SKA faces is that Facebook can build a data center here or under the water or whatever. We need to have we need to collect the data close to the source, which happens to be the middle of nowhere without power. So we are also facing problems of how to transport and a lot of those things. So we could build an exascale computing today with today's technology if we own a nuclear plant or we have a dam or a river beside it. I think that the budget, it's capped for 20 megawatts or something like that. So it's not a question about which are the, sorry, I'm not wording it well. Boards that fund scientific projects control what they understand, which is the budget. They not necessarily understand the core science. They were convinced once. They approved that and then deal with that. Then the guy who presented that vision later went to the vendor or made a bigger view of how is the technology, and they realized that, oh, I need another 200 million euros. The board will say, yeah, right. You do whatever you can with that and be grateful that we are not taking away for that hospital or whatever. So the exascale facilities are literally dictated for how the ingenuity that we can create to use the money available.
But would it be even sufficient? Because I mean,
sorry.
So the data rate is pretty staggering. So I'm not even sure about the.
That's the point. We are constantly rebaselining. So.
Sorry, may I cut the discussion short? It goes
yes.
A bit off in a tangent. That's not relevant to the project.
Okay.
Maybe you want to take off during the coffee break. Follow us now. So let's thank the speaker again.